Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey, that also services the township of Little Falls.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And we are so excited that you tuned in today. We are launching a new series called, drumroll please, Health Waves, Voices in Healthcare. This series will take place with some few special guests that all focus on healthcare. And we sit down with really important individuals focusing on such as healthcare access, first aid basics, and much, much more. So please tune in to our series.
Here is part two. First aid basics.
Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And we also service the township of Little Falls.
Welcome.
Welcome so much, and thank you so much for listening. Today, we are focusing on the importance of first aid basics. Choking, bleeding, and burns. And with us today is none other than our illustrious partner, the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, MD candidate student, Gabrielle Okori, EMT.
Yeah, and thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about some first aid basics, something everyone I think should know a little bit about.
Absolutely, and we totally agree. Before we get started, can you just tell us what first aid basics means?
So I have a background as an EMT, and that was kind of one of the drivers for me going to medical school. And so I think first aid really encompasses a lot of common injuries or things that we encounter every day outside of a hospital, just on our own. So a lot of people have, minor cuts and scrapes causing bleeding, or some people can get burns out in the sun or touching hot surfaces. And even choking is something I feel like anybody can really encounter. So I think it's always important to go over at least some of these main topics in the first aid.
Awesome. And like I originally stated, you want to focus on choking, bleeding, and burn. We'll start with burns. That's our first topic. So what is a burn?
Yeah, I think burns are like really commonly associated with touching hot items, being exposed to some kind of like fire. But they're also commonly caused by things like chemicals, electricity, radiation, or even friction. Mm-hmm. Burns are topical damage to the biggest organ in our body, our skin. But they can definitely include deeper tissue. So our skin is several layers thick, and it can include, burns can go all the way from the top layer of the skin all the way to the deeper structures.
Absolutely. And so basically knowing what type of burns there are out there, it's really important. So can you touch upon what are the type of burns and how would someone know that we just need a Band-Aid, we just need ointment, or we do need medical care?
Yeah, absolutely. I think understanding the basics of burns helps you decide if you need to go get further care. So burn nomenclature really used to involve things like first or second degree or third degree burns. And a lot of people are familiar with that terminology, but now they're classified a little bit more in depth. So there are superficial burns. That was what was classically called your first degree burn. Mm-hmm. These are burns that involve pretty much only the top layer of your skin. You can associate these with touching hot surface really quickly and pulling your hand away, or being out in the sun. Your skin will usually be hot and red. They're usually kind of painful, tingly, and these are really, really common. They do not blister, so that's very important to know.
That's important, yeah.
Right, and they usually resolve within 5 to 10 days on their own. And then you have your classically second degree burns, which involve two categories. You have a superficial partial thickness burn or a deep partial thickness burn, and both of them kind of fell under the umbrella terminology of the second degree burn. So a superficial partial thickness burn, these are burns involving the dermis, which is a little bit of a deeper layer of your skin. These are usually painful red, swollen, and can start to blister.
Okay.
And then your superficial deep thickness burns, these involve all of the dermis, which is that second layer of skin. These often have damaged nerves and some damage to the deeper tissues. So they actually tend to be painless. They're very white and kind of leathery looking. And then lastly is your third degree burn, which is classified now as a deep thickness burn. So these are full thickness of the skin. They involve your subcutaneous and further tissue below. The skin is usually painless at that point because you've damaged all of the nerves. And these kinds of burns can typically be black, charred, and painless.
Oh, wow. So when you talk about all the types of burns, if a person sees anything on their loved one, what should they do?
Yeah, so if you see your loved one get burned, it's always important before you go help others to ensure you are safe. So if there's a burning open flame, if there is some kind of danger, make sure not to harm yourself while you're helping others. And then remove your loved one from said threatening thing. So if it's a fire, extinguish the flame or remove yourself and your loved one from wherever the fire is. Turn off the source of the heat. So if it's from a hot stove, make sure you turn the stove off or turn off the electrical source that someone received the burn from. If it's a chemical burn, these are really important. Obviously, ensure your own safety. Make sure not to spill any chemicals on yourself. But remove any contaminated clothing that the person who was affected, remove it all immediately. And then those areas should absolutely, absolutely be rinsed for like 15 to 20 minutes with clean water if you can. A lot of people think that if somebody was burned by a chemical, you should try and neutralize whatever the chemical was. So people try to neutralize acids with bases like bleach, but definitely do not do any of that.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah, so when
don't
you play
go back to your like high school chemistry class.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Try not to mix any more chemicals or make it worse. The best thing you can do for these burns is remove whatever clothing was there and rinse it with water for a continuous time.
Okay.
So if you can continuously flush the burn with cool but not ice cold water, that's the best way to do it. And then call 911 as soon as possible. And then just to keep in mind, typically all third degree burns, as we spoke about those full thickness burns that can be black, and most of your second degree burns, which are those superficial partial thickness and superficial deep thick or superficial, yeah, deep thickness burns, those should absolutely be seen by professionals in the ER. Especially ones that cover large body areas because they have a lot of consequences. So definitely seeing definitive care is very important. I think it's also important to mention here that if your loved one gets burned, try not to apply any like creams or ointments. I know one thing people have done is putting butter on the area. I definitely don't think that should be done. Try to leave the burn alone besides just cool water. And seek definitive care. If you see blisters on a burn, do not break them. They are kind of sterile in that little blister, and your skin will resorb that on its own. Once you burst a blister, you can absolutely introduce infection to the area, which is a big no-no for burns. Yeah. And make sure to watch your loved one. So if you've called 911, and you're waiting for more help, or even if they're deciding to stay home and not going to seek care at the right moment, just keep an eye on them, especially in the first couple of hours. If it's a more severe burn, they can cause things like massive fluid loss. So your loved one can go into shock, which is when they experience this kind of cold and clammy skin. They look pallorous, so they look, they lose some of their color to their skin. So I think the best thing to do is keep an eye on them. If you do notice some of those changes, try and lay them flat. Keep them warm, cover them up with a blanket, avoid the burn area so you can keep an eye on it, but keep them warm and just keep an eye on them. One other thing to mention as well is that sometimes these burns can be really severe, and if they involve the face or the mouth, you can get some kind of inhalation injury also as well. A lot of times, like, people will experience those kinds of burns when they're in a house fire. So definitely monitor them closely and be ready for the worst, because a lot of people can lose the ability to breathe.
Wow. Burns are very, you know, a lot of people might think burns might not happen to them. Maybe especially in the beginning of this year, we had a bunch of wildfires in LA. So just thinking about how those people were affected by that. So sometimes knowing this basic first aid training might help those who are not even near us or in our community, but also, you know, across the way in a different coast. But these are very important first aid basics on burns. If anyone wanted to know any further, more resources, where can they find just a little bit more information on kind of maybe some infographics on what the different types of burns there are and what they can do?
Yeah, definitely. So there are a lot of great societies online. You can go to the American Burn Association. They can have some infographics that you can find information on, and definitely some instructions if you need it. I have some other articles pulled up here that are a bit more specialized from emergency medicine textbooks, but if you do come around common emergency medicine kind of teachings to the public, a lot of those resources will also cover burns as well.
And then we'll move on to our next topic. This one makes me queasy, but it definitely doesn't make some of our listeners queasy, but bleeding. Can you talk about bleeding and the types of bleeding that they have?
Yeah, definitely. Blood is definitely one of those things that make people queasy, so I do not blame you.
Good.
But a lot of people see it and want to jump right in and help. So I think it's always important to discuss the types of bleeds and kind of what to do. So bleeding, as we all know, cut scrapes can cause bleeding. Minor bleeds are typically shallow. They kind of stop quickly or stop on their own. Sometimes all it takes is a little bit of pressure and a Band-Aid and they'll stop on their own. But then you have to think about things like major bleeds. So when we get cut or injured to a much deeper extent, you can have arterial bleeding, which is bleeding from the big arteries in our body that carry blood all around. And those bleeds look pulsatile, so they look like they kind of spurt on their own. They don't really stop with pressure, so you can hold pressure for a really long time and they just keep going. And major bleeds can definitely cause similar things like shock, as we had mentioned before with the burns, where somebody can get really cold, like clammy, cold, and be totally out of it. A lot of times with major bleeds, it's common secondary to trauma. So if you cut yourself really badly with a knife or car accidents, things like that, you'll see some of those major bleeds.
So they're immediate phone calls to the emergency room.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. For major bleeding, definitely.
Okay.
When you are looking at blood, for those who are ready to help, not myself, but other people, are we able to just walk in barehanded, or is it important to have kind of a barrier if you are going to start first aid?
Yeah, if you're somebody who feels comfortable performing first aid, something that I learned when I was in my EMT training is that you always have to, one, make sure the scene is safe and make sure you are safe. So if you're walking up to a motor vehicle accident and you saw somebody get hurt in a car accident, you see them now bleeding and you want to go help, make sure you're not going to get hurt by a car coming by. Make sure you're not going to put yourself in any immediate danger. You should always call 911 if you see something like that before you approach the scene. And then if you do have kind of barrier protection, if you have gloves, if you have medical supplies in your car or wherever you are, like, it is important. You do have to consider that blood is an infectious fluid that carries pathogens. So make sure you don't hurt yourself while you're also taking care of others. If you see somebody bleeding, especially a loved one, a lot of times people experience these kinds of things at home and they see like their significant other maybe got cut by a knife or their kid got hurt playing with something. Mm-hmm. Obviously make sure they're safe, you're safe. And then what you can do is kind of, once you are protected and ready to kind of take care of them, you can kind of start to clean the wound with water. Try not to use things like alcohol swabs. Those will burn and they're not good for your exposed tissues. And then once you've done that, apply pressure immediately. You can take some sterile gauze, you can take some paper towels or a towel or something, and just put pressure there and see if it will stop. If it stops on its own, that's great. That means you have kind of more of a minor bleed. But if it doesn't, you should definitely think about definitive care and calling 911 as soon as possible. If you do have something that's a little bit, less of a bleeder stopping on its own, you can cover that up with a bandage, or you can wrap the wound with some gauze as long as it's on like an extremity. Like if you have a cut on your arm, you can wrap the cut around. But if you cut your neck, try not to do anything like that, because obviously we have some major structures there that help us breathe. So don't put any significant pressure where you don't think it's safe to, but if you have like a cut or scrape on your arm and leg, it's totally safe to wrap that up to help the bandage, you know, just keep some pressure on that to help it stop bleeding and help it heal.
It seems like the theme here, especially in the beginning of a first aid basic, is to check the scene, make sure you're safe, and the scene around you is safe for you to help.
Yeah, definitely. If you are somebody who's kind of a bystander on a scene, or you see someone else get hurt, I think before you take any action, it's most important to always think about yourself as well. You don't want to put yourself in harm's way. Absolutely. I did want to mention, if you are somebody who is a little bit more experienced and you have things like and you see a kind of more of a major bleed and you know how to apply a tourniquet and you have a tourniquet, which is kind of a device that helps kind of constrict, the blood flow above a wound, what you would do in that instance. And I know a lot of people kind of put this on TV. People will use belts and things like that.
Yeah.
But if you have a tourniquet specifically, sometimes they are in first aid kits, et cetera. So if you have one of those, you can put them kind of more above the injury. So if the injury is on your wrist or your hand, you can put it above the injury at the, maybe right below the elbow or even at the upper arm, and just tighten that until the bleeding stops.
Right.
And always, 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 when you are putting on a constriction device, make sure to mark what time you did that. Because when you're bringing, right. When you're bringing that person to the hospital then for more care, you know when that was put on. So we don't want to cause any further injury to the site. So just always be careful with those kinds of things as well. And any kind of major bleeding, of course, as we mentioned before, should always go to the ER.
Right. Should always seek medical help for sure.
And that helps you as a medical student candidate. That's going to help you in the ER, right? Is that where your new residency is going to be? Is that what your passion is, emergency medicine?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, I'm an EMT by training, and I went to med school because I loved being out in the field and taking care of people. And that's exactly what I pursued. So I will be an emergency medicine resident. I'm graduating from medical school in June, and I'll be starting my residency in July. So definitely I will be dealing with lots of things like this. So that's why I always think it's very important to talk about and educate people on if we can.
Well, definitely congratulations. And as she said before, definitely put the time on there so it can help her out in the ER area, right? When it is a major bleed. So you touched upon tourniquets, and if someone did want to receive a tourniquet or have them in their first aid kit, where can they buy that, or where can they get that resource from?
Yeah, I specifically mentioned tourniquets because I know a lot of people get them in first aid kits. A lot of commonly are in first aid kits you can buy online. So I think it's important just to touch on them if you have them available. If you're somebody who wants to have one on hand or wants more information about it, I think a good website to visit is the American Red Cross, where they talk about how tourniquets are used and further instructions there on how to apply them correctly.
That's great. And we'll be sure to link that in our bio so all the listeners out there can have that reference. All right. And now we're going to move on to topic 3. And this one is super important because this can save, all of this can save someone's life. But definitely choking is topic 3. And why is having first aid basics and learning about choking so important?
Yeah, I think so many people experience choking firsthand. A lot of kids choke on things. A lot of
Right.
elderly adults choke. And it's incredibly dangerous and can commonly be fatal. So having the knowledge of how to treat people immediately who are choking is super duper important, because we can't go very long without air, and it really happens so much more frequently than we think.
So choking occurs either when a person's airway becomes blocked. Is it always going to be when they eat something? Is that normally how it goes?
A lot of times this happens when people are eating, but little kids especially pick up things like small objects and will put them in their mouth, and that's a common choking hazard.
Okay.
Especially kids who are under the age of 5, they're at a much higher risk of choking. And so I think it's always really important, one, to be watchful of your children and elderly relatives what around meal times, but two, like making sure when you're around little toys, Legos, things like that, if you have a little kid at home, to keep an eye on them, because you'll be surprised at how frequently they put things in their mouth.
It seems like anyone is at risk for choking, and clearly it seems like younger children or older adults. What about people with maybe people with disabilities or swallowing dysfunctions? Can you just talk about and touch upon what that would mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to mention. So a lot of people we know in our lives have had some neurological diseases or things like stroke, dementia, Parkinson's disease is common. People who take sedating medications and some psychiatric medications really have a difficulty really forming a food in their mouth when they're chewing. That makes it easy to swallow and safer to swallow. So a lot of people who have problems with that are at a much higher risk of choking. So definitely keep those populations in mind when you're around people like that who are eating, or putting things in their mouth, even drinking. People can aspirate on liquids. And then definitely, as mentioned before, children around small choking hazards, especially kids under the age of 5, are important to keep an eye on.
And now I just want to touch upon how does someone identify choking? Is there some specific sign, or is there a sound? Or is it just super common? Like, I mean, a person's not going to say, well, can that be something that a person will say? Maybe I am choking, and they come out. Or is it because they're speaking, no one's going to believe them?
Yeah, I think with medicine, there's different degrees of everything. And just like with choking, you can have like partial obstructions. And so people might say, like, I feel like I have something in my throat. I feel like I can't swallow. That can be a sign that something is stuck there and that they're kind of choking. But a lot of people, like, who are severely choking, they probably won't be able to speak. Sometimes people will kind of gesture to their throat. That's a common one. Maybe sometimes you could hear coughing or gagging. Inability to make noises is very important, because that means it's their airway is severely blocked. So you have to watch out for patients who could be, and people who are in distress like that. Sometimes you can even hear noisy breathing, which is a sign of an obstruction and close to a full obstruction. That's something called stridor, which is an upper airway sound. It kind of sounds like, if you've ever heard wheezing, like for a child or an adult who has asthma, it kind of sounds like that, high pitched, but it's all from the upper airway. So people who are choking and have things stuck in their throat, that's really important to keep an eye on, and maybe bring those people to the ER as soon as possible.
That's really great to know. Because it might not happen to you or your loved one, but you might be in a restaurant enjoying a meal, and it might be happening to someone on the other side.
Exactly. You never know when you might see that, but definitely always being
Yeah, and
wary.
exactly. And being wary is very important. So what can we do if we do see that, if we do see someone choking, or if our loved one is choking, how can we assist them, and how can we help them?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is kind of assess, are they having a full airway obstruction? Are they not making any noise? And if that's the case, that's kind of a severe scenario. For those people, you absolutely, absolutely need to call 911 before you do anything. Call 911 and get somebody on their way to help them. And then a lot of times, if you, in restaurants and scenarios like that, you might see those charts on the wall with how to do something called the Heimlich maneuver. That's a common one. So that's a technique where we do abdominal thrusts to kind of dislodge the foreign body out of the airway and get them to kind of clear that obstruction. So the way you would do that, so this would be for adults and children who are over a year old, and even like a little bit older children, it's easier to do. So for these patients, you should stand behind them. You okay. should place your arms around their waist. It's typically kind of around their umbilicus or their belly button area. And you're going to make a fist with one hand. You're going to kind of hold them, kind of giving them a bear hug from the back. Okay. Place that hand right over their belly button and cover that hand with your other hand. Okay. You're going to place the thumb side of your fist at the person's belly button, exactly as I mentioned. And quickly with force, you're going to push inward and upward for a thrust. And then you'll continue to keep doing that until the object is expelled. So there, yeah.
And expelled means the person has thrown
coughed it up.
Coughed
yeah.
It up. Okay.
Coughed it up, or the obstruction is clear and now they're talking and can breathe. So that would be kind of ideal scenario. But there is a scenario for these people as well that they might become unconscious because the airway was continued to be obstructed and the object wasn't dislodged. And that is kind of a different scenario that I think we'll touch on. And
Before that, is there a way for under 1 year old, just in case if there is a child?
Yeah, so this is a little bit different because obviously we can't give babies the Heimlich maneuver.
Right.
So you would give babies kind of this back blow chest thrust maneuver. Okay. So you'll actually put them face down on your forearm. The baby's face will be kind of in your hand, like chin in the palm of your hand. Try not to cover their airway at all. So don't cover their mouth or nose. Give them enough space to kind of, have... if they're going to cough something up, spit something up, that they can do that. And it's not going to come back in their mouth. So yeah, make sure their mouth and nose is either above your fingers or between your fingers or what be it,
Right.
And then lay them tummy down on your forearm. That way you're kind of supporting their head and you're also supporting their body.
Right. So is the forearm supposed to be flat?
So the way I learned to do this is that you actually kind of use your knee or your leg to support your forearm. So you're going to rest them almost like on your lap, face down. And then what you would do is give up to 5 back blows. So you're going to angle the heel of your hand right between their shoulder blades, and kind of have to hit tap them pretty forcefully to give them enough force to get the object out. Obviously, try not to do anything too forceful. Don't hurt your child or anyone else's child. So be very careful. But it's called a back blow because it's a little meant to be a little bit forceful to help dislodge that object. So you'll do that no more than 5 times, but up to 5 times.
Okay.
And then once ready, you'll actually take your other forearm and bring the baby over. So you'll flip them now onto their back.
Before we do that, where are the firm back blows going?
They're going right between their shoulder blades on the back. So heel of the hand to kind of upper mid back, right in the middle.
Got it. Okay. So now the baby is turned over. And what's next?
From them laying on their stomach, you're going to put your other forearm on your other knee and flip them over onto their back. And so this is when you would do a couple chest compressions, essentially, where you're kind of just going to give them up to like 5 presses into their mid chest with 2 or 3 fingers. You don't have to do this too forcefully, just enough to give them a little bit more force to either clear the object and help them out that way. And this also allows you to kind of visualize the airway. So if you see them and they're like spitting stuff up and they have a piece of food like at the corner of their lips and you can just wipe that away, that's the most ideal scenario, because then you knew that they were able to kind of get some of that out of their airway. And then you would just keep repeating this cycle of going from back blows to chest thrusts over and over, five each time, until help arrives or until the airway is cleared. Or until the baby becomes unconscious as well.
Right. So now let's touch upon, if a person does become unconscious, what would happen? What would he need to do?
So if a person becomes unconscious, we'll start with kind of adults. You'd want to lay them down immediately and begin CPR. I'm not going to go into all the specifics of CPR because I think a lot of people have seen how it works. And there's a lot of really amazing resources on the American Heart Association to kind of discuss how CPR works. But essentially, it's a series of chest compressions and breaths to kind of help resuscitate a patient or help somebody if they're not breathing and if their heart stops. The biggest thing with all of this is to get definitive care. So 911 should have been called a while ago, but if they hadn't already been called, call them now.
Right. That was the first step. It says call 911 immediately. So by this point, it should be there. They should be ready to take over. But if they weren't, definitely call them at that point. For those that don't know what CPR stands for, what does that acronym mean?
That means cardiopulmonary resuscitation. So a lot of people who are choking will end up becoming unconscious, and that's because they went into distress with breathing. They couldn't breathe, and that kind of caused their heart to go into a rhythm that's not perfusing the body. You're not bringing blood around the body anymore. So now it's become a bigger problem than just, oh, I can't breathe. Now it's, I need help getting blood to the rest of my body. So it's a bit more involved, and it's definitely helpful if you know somebody who has a CPR certification. But if you want to learn how to get a CPR certification or learn more, the American Heart Association is the place to go.
The American Heart Association, absolutely. And I believe the Red Cross also provides CPR training. So those are two really great trainings. And if anyone listening would like more research or resources for that, we will put that in the bio. We'll link the trainings there. But how can someone, now we're still talking about choking, how can choking be prevented?
Yeah, so I think we've discussed a little bit about the high-risk population. So this is really important when you're speaking about those populations, especially little kids or the elderly. If you're somebody who prepares food for others, make sure the food is cut into small enough pieces that they can chew and swallow. If they can't chew, make sure it's, you know, whatever diet they're supposed to be following, if it's kind of pureed, things like that. It's always important to follow to you know, ease them swallowing and eating so they don't choke. You should avoid things that are high risk. So big whole foods that don't have like small holes in them, like grapes is a common thing for children to choke on. So that's why you see a lot of people cutting grapes into small pieces. And then avoid, you know, playing with toys and things like that while also associated with meal times. So kids shouldn't have toys while they're eating dinner. Definitely not. And then you should definitely always supervise people at risk for choking, young children, the elderly, to make sure that they are chewing and swallowing safely. I did want to mention before we kind of move off the topic is that if you see somebody who is choking or you are concerned for someone who's choking, who is conscious or coughing or able to speak, I wouldn't suggest starting that whole Heimlich maneuver, back thrust, you know, chest thrust, back blows thing, because sometimes you can actually agitate their airway a little bit more and worsen the obstruction. So if someone is breathing and speaking on their own, but you're worried that they are kind of choking or have something stuck, I would just immediately seek care. Try not to agitate them. Obviously think about, you know, escalating to those more serious things if the obstruction becomes severe and they are no longer speaking or breathing. But if they are still kind of okay, so to speak, I wouldn't start all of that.
Okay, absolutely. So don't jump to that initial if they are speaking or actively talking to
breathing,
you.
Yeah, then you know that their airway is okay for now, but you should definitely seek care if you're concerned that they are going to choke or that it's going to get worse.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. And a lot of people in restaurants who work in restaurants who may see this often, maybe it is really important for you to have that, you know, the choking form there, or to even seek CPR training just in case. Absolutely. I know we talked about, this is all about first aid. So why is it important just to have first aid basics?
I think for everyone, knowing a little bit about the first aid can help at least start the process. If a loved one's really hurt or if a loved one is choking, these are really emergent conditions that need to be cared for immediately. Mm-hmm. If you kind of know what to do and to start the process, it helps you not get stuck in like deer in headlights. It helps you realize, hey, I need to call 911 and this is what I should do from here. So knowing a little bit about that, it just helps us be better people, better caretakers, and helps us just be safer overall in our day-to-day lives.
And I know that sometimes it might be difficult because a lot of people in the midst of an emergency, they might just default to, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. But this is an awesome way to kind of, if you listen to this podcast, to kind of just remember that first aid basics is very important. And these are some ways that you may be able to kind of, you know, jot your brain or train your brain before you find yourself in a high pressured situation. So awesome. Gabby, you've done so amazing teaching us all about first aid basics. Is there any other resources or any other information you would like to share with the listeners here?
I think we touched on a lot of great resources. Definitely refer to things like the Red Cross or the American Heart Association for kind of more resources on what to do, just for general safety tips. Wherever you are as well, it's always good to just kind of read up and, you know, we always say prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So
absolutely,
that's the best way to be, I think.
Thank you so much. And we're really excited for our partnership here. And we hope to see you again on the podcast with another topic. But if not, we can talk about first aid basics so much. There's a lot to talk about with first aid basics. So if you're happy to come back, you're more than welcome to. But I just want to say congratulations and thank you so much for, you know, being a medical student and being the next generation of doctors in the emergency room. So thank you so much for everything you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. And I hope that someone out there learned a little bit today.
Yeah, I believe a lot of people learned a lot today. But if you do have any other questions of those listeners and would like more resources or any more information on first aid basics, don't hesitate to reach out to the Clifton Health Department. We do have some resources or information that we can give you for sure. All right. Thank you so much, Gabby. I hope you have a wonderful day. Lauren, take us out.
Don't forget to tune into our podcast every other week for a new episode. You may visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?